Kids Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Lipponier, bringing you an hour of mystery later on from Hercule Poirot from 1945. But first, it's an episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, called The Lake Mead Mystery Matter, first heard on CBS on March 22nd, 1959.
Johnny Dollar.
Fat McCracken, Johnny, at Universal Adjustment Bureau.
Greetings, Master.
Now, don't give me that. Johnny, I believe you spent a couple of weekends down in Sarasota, Florida, early this month.
Pat, you know darn well I did.
Had a chance to get in some fishing?
You know darn well I didn't. That's why I've been sitting here dreaming about those lunker bass at the Lake Mojave Resort out in Arizona.
Well, what's the matter with Lake Mead?
Huh?
You know, the huge man-made lake backed up by Hoover Dam?
Yeah, I know.
A few miles this side of Las Vegas, Nevada? A lot of big ones in that water, I understand.
Okay, Pat, you got me all excited. Now, what's it all about?
I told you. Fishing.
Yeah, and?
That's all. Except...
Yeah? Except what?
Slight case of murder.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Here's actress Joan Bennett.
It's terrible to try to act with a dreadful cold. To feel better quickly, I take four-way cold tablets. The fast way to relieve nasty cold distress.
Yes, tests of four leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting of all. Amazing four-way starts in minutes to relieve aches, pains, headaches, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
When you catch cold, try my way. Take four-way cold tablets. The fast way to relieve cold distress.
Four-way, 29 and 59 cents.
Now, a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. Had dandruff for years? Now get rid of it in 3 minutes with Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. 3 minutes with Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep unsightly dandruff away forever. Apply Fitch before wetting hair. Rub in 1 minute. Add water. Lather 1 minute. Then rinse 1 minute. Every trace of dandruff goes down the drain. 3 minutes with Fitch, embarrassing dandruff gone. Fitch can also leave hair up to 35% brighter. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today. And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Lake Mead mystery matter.
All right, now, Johnny, your contact will be Mr. Roscoe Trimmer. He's head of the local office of Greater Southwest Insurance and Liability right there in Las Vegas.
You said murder. Can you give me any details?
No, you'll have to get everything from Trimmer. All I know is there's a $20,000 policy involved and double indemnity. So the sooner you can get out there, the better.
Okay, Pat, I'll grab the first plane I can. Expense account item one, $2 even for a fast taxi to the airport. Item two, $6.70 plane fare to New York. Item three, $145.05, another plane ticket. And I barely made the 12 o'clock noon mainliner, which promptly took off and headed west to Las Vegas, Nevada. It was 9:45 p.m. Pacific time when we started the long glide down from a starlit sky to the landing strip at McCarran Field in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'll never cease to marvel at the nighttime view from the air of that fabulous city of chance. Sitting alone out there in the middle of the vast Mojave Desert, the sky-filling glow from its millions of lights, it had put a rainbow to shame. Oasis in the desert. Yeah, and very beautiful. I knew that Roscoe Trimmer's office would be closed this time of night, so I looked for a place to rest my weary head. Item four, $1.50 for a cab into the Flamingo. And I just happen to remember that the Flamingo has an excellent casino. Now, I'm really not a gambling man in the usual sense of the word, but who can resist the lure of the dice and roulette tables, the blackjack, even the slot machines in a setting like this? Sure, the house always wins, and the sucker who forks out his hard-earned money doesn't stand a chance. But you know something? After a few hours of play, I came out so far ahead that I won't even bother to list my food and hotel room on this expense account. I really cleaned up. How much? Well, if I told you, you'd probably want me to absorb the whole thing, so I won't. Then, early the next morning, I met Roscoe Trimmer at the office of Greater Southwest Insurance and Liability.
Dollar, I'm glad you could make it. I don't like this one at all, Howard.
Hiya, Rosk.
Sit down, will you?
Yeah,
but
sure.
But not for long.
Huh?
I've arranged a drive-it-yourself car for you. And the sooner you can get over to Lake Mead, the better.
Well, just where, Roscoe? That's a pretty big lake.
Overton. A little town 50, 60 miles north and east of here. At the upper end of the lake.
So what's happened up there?
Johnny, a client of mine, Thomas Mayfield Thomas, came out here from Chicago last year. Retired here. I don't know much about him, except that our Chicago office sent me his file when he came and asked me to look out for him.
Uh-huh. Go on.
About a week ago, Thomas and a friend went fishing together out of Overton Landing. They went out with Hob Fulton on his charter boat. Incidentally, if you ask me, Hob's the best guide on the whole lake.
Good, I'll remember that.
Only you're here on a case, remember?
Oh, sure. But go on.
Well, the fishing must have been pretty good, because they stayed on at the Overton Motel. Then the next morning, they went down to the landing, rented a little Arkansas traveler and a 10-horse Johnson, and went out fishing on their own.
Rosk, I may try that very thing myself.
But about the middle of the afternoon, a big east wind came up. You know what that means.
I know that when a big easter hits one of those desert lakes, there's only one thing you do, get off it quick.
Well, they didn't, Johnny. At least not quick enough. The following morning, when the blow had died down, Hob Fulton went out to look for him.
And?
He found the boat, all right. Beached on a point down near Goat Island. And Mr. Thomas's friend.
What about Thomas?
His friend says that Thomas went overboard when the squall hit him.
Well, it's certainly possible.
Yes, it is. Possible.
The chop on a lake like that can build up waves 8 and 10 feet high, enough to throw a man off any kind of a boat.
Yes, I know.
But you don't think that's the way it happened?
I didn't say that, Johnny. It's just that... Well...
Okay, Rosk. What was his fishing pal's name?
Charlie Wentworth. Does that mean anything to you?
No.
Well, I'm afraid I don't know very much about him either. Except that he, too, came here from Chicago. Arrived in town about 2 weeks ago.
I take it that's where he knew Thomas, back in Chicago.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, what about him? What does this Charlie Wentworth do?
Apparently nothing. But hang around the gambling joints. Oh, he does a little dealing and shilling for some of them now and then. There's talk he's been making illegal book on the races, so nobody's pinned it on him.
So, in your book, he's an undesirable character.
That's right.
But is that reason to suspect he took Mr. Thomas out on that lake and murdered him?
Now, Johnny, there's been a lot of worry around this town about some of the people who've come out here recently from Chicago. You know, ever since those investigations began back east.
So what? Does that mean everybody who comes from there is a killer?
No, of course not. But a man who doesn't really work for a living, you know, just spends all his time around the gambling tables, has no visible regular means of support.
Thomas was retired. Maybe Charlie Wentworth is, too.
Oh, Johnny.
Besides, who knows? Maybe Thomas will show up. Maybe he swam to shore and is plodding his way back through the desert.
Oh, now, you know the odds against a city man surviving out there.
Well, does anybody really look for him?
Everybody. The police, the National Park boys, everybody. Not only in boats, on foot, but they even use planes and a helicopter. They found no trace.
Well, that still doesn't prove anything. Tell me this. Are the police holding Charlie Wentworth?
No, they're not.
Which means they don't feel they have any reason to. But you still think I ought to investigate?
Yes, I do.
Roscoe? So do I.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
Hey, Dad. Did you check your car filters today?
No, son, I didn't. Why?
Because it might pay you $1,000.
$1,000 for a car filter?
That's right, folks. You may have a filter under the hood of your car worth $1,000 and not even know it. A Fram filter worth $1,000. Check your oil filter and air filter now. If there's a specially numbered Fram filter in your car, you will win up to $1,000 and your dealer will win the same amount. Get in on Fram's big silver treasure hunt. Check your car filters now.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Lake Mead Mystery Matter.
Neither the police nor anybody else in Las Vegas seemed to think Thomas was murdered out on Lake Mead. But what Roscoe Trimmer told me made me suspicious, yeah, of Thomas's fishing pal, a man named Charlie Wentworth. Expense account item 5640. I telephoned to my old friend Ken Bugby, reporter on the Chicago Citizen News.
Thomas? Thomas?
Yeah, that's right, Ken. What can you tell me about him?
Well, not everybody knew it, Johnny, but he was a mouthpiece for the old Moretti mob. That was some years ago.
Oh?
When they started the big cleanup, well, either Thomas couldn't or just plain wouldn't get him off the hook. Let them all go to jail. Then he settled down and retired in his home out in Elmhurst.
Well, he's certainly not there now, Ken.
No, about a year ago, he suddenly sold his place, packed up, moved out west somewhere.
Why? Do you know?
Change of climate, I guess. What about him, Johnny?
Ever hear of Charlie Wentworth?
Are you kidding? He was one of Moretti's trigger men. Casual Charlie, they called him.
You, know where he is now?
Oh, they sent him up to Joliet Prison along with the rest of the mob. Those boys will be in the clink the rest of their natural... Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah?
Casual Charlie and Snooty Wilson were released. Yeah. And, hey, that was just about the same time that Thomas moved away from here. If that means anything.
Baby, I got a hunch it means everything.
Oh? Like what, Johnny?
Thanks a lot, Ken. Next stop was the public library, the old newspaper file. Getting some info on the almost forgotten Moretti mob was a lead pipe cinch, especially about the time when the gang was broken up. And apparently, when lawyer Thomas saw the jig was up for his boys, having made his pile, and to keep himself out of trouble, he left them flat. He'd let them get sent to the pen without raising a finger in their defense. So don't tell me that a mobster wouldn't want to get even with the guy who'd let him down. Sure, Charlie had killed Thomas. I was sure of it without even seeing him. But to prove it, without the corpus delicti. I spent item six, $32 even on some equipment at the sporting goods store. Then I drove north on Highway 91 to the quiet little town of Overton. There I learned that for once, Hob Fulton, the fishing guide, had a free day on his hands, but he was down at the lake some 12 miles east of the town. I met him at the dock, and within a few minutes, we were on board as Higgins went about and heading south. Tremendous thing, something like a 550-mile shoreline, the biggest man-made body of water in the world, I believe. Just thinking about the record-breaking largemouth bass that have come out of that lake fairly made my mouth water. I carefully checked out the equipment I'd brought along.
So you spent a lot of good money renting that stuff from Shelby's Port and just down in Vegas, huh?
Yep.
Well, where's the spear?
Bob, I don't think I'm going to need a spear.
I don't think you're going to need any of that stuff. You ask me, though, if you want to catch fish... Borrow one of those rigs I brought along.
Bob, I just want you to take me to the same spot you took Mr. Thomas and Charlie Wentworth.
Too bad about that, Mr. Thomas. I got a lot of nice bass, though. You know, fishing only real deep holes. That's where they are this time of year.
That's what I figured.
If only they had sense enough to come back in that next day when the wind started to blow.
Did they seem to get along all right, Bob?
I told the police about that, Mr. Dollar, but I guess it didn't mean anything.
Told them about what?
Well, you ask me, Mr. Thomas wasn't any too happy fishing with Charlie Wentworth. But Charlie kept saying, let bygones be bygones and let's enjoy the fishing, so...
When you found Charlie in the boat the next morning, was there tackle still in it?
Have you ever seen this lake when there's a big blow from the east, Mr. Starr?
I've seen Lake Mojave when it's been that way, but you haven't answered my question.
No, sir. The tackle boxes got thrown overboard along with everything else. Even that big one of Charlie's. Oh, he had enough stuff in that thing to sink the Queen Mary.
He did, huh? Like what, Hob?
Well, I didn't poke around in it. When I heisted on board. Oh, look. There's the glory hole. First place to stop for him. So if that's what you want, that's where we'll start.
How deep is it?
I'd say about a tree and a half.
A tree and a half?
Well, you know how high up there's a tree is. Glory hole's about a tree and a half.
Oh, I see.
But, Johnny, if you're going to use that rig you brought along...
I'll just pull up to the same spot you showed them where to fish. By the end of 2 hours, I'd tried at least half a dozen of the holes where Hob had taken Thomas and Charlie. No luck. Then we went 4 or 5 miles further down the lake and pulled up just below Goat Island, just below the big rock slide.
Deepest hole in this part of the lake, Dollar. Must be near the 5 trees. A lot of ledges down there on the sides of it, so you better go kind of easy.
I covered every inch of that hole, and with the aid of a powerful waterproof headlamp I brought along. Then finally I came back up to the surface. That's right, I said came back up to the surface.
John. Let me give you a hand back in the boat.
No, thanks. I'll rest you in the water for a minute. That's a pretty deep hole.
Yeah, but how you ever expect to catch bass in that skin diving rig without even a spear?
Hand me a long rope, Hob. I found it down there.
Huh?
Yeah, on a ledge about 50 feet down, lashed onto that heavy tackle box you were talking about. That's what made it sink.
What are you talking about, Johnny?
The body of Thomas Thomas.
What?
Yeah. And there's a bullet hole right between the eyes.
And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
I took the body of Thomas Thomas back to headquarters in Las Vegas and hung around long enough to hear Dr. Richard Fallon say the bullet hole was definitely made by a .38 and at close range. To hear Police Captain Willis say there'd be no action taken until the bullet could be removed for study. But I knew he'd change his mind when he had time to think about it. So I left headquarters and started making the rounds of the gambling casinos. Luck was with me. The second place I stopped, one of the public joints on Fremont Street.
I'm the winner of Fremont at 34, Rev and Neva.
Well, have you seen him around here today?
Yes, Charlie Wentworth. He just come in the door, mister.
Thanks.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Excuse me, please. Pardon me, will you? May I get through here, please? Thank you. Excuse me. Charlie Wentworth?
Yeah, Buster?
Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator. Here's my credentials.
I guess you want to talk about my pal, Tommy Thomas, got drowned over in Lake Mead last week. Is that it?
Yeah, something like that.
Buster, that was an awful thing, him going like that. He was an old buddy of mine.
Was he?
Sure was. An old buddy. Why don't we talk over in my room, huh? Too much noise around here. Okay by you?
Sure, why not?
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding.
No, listen, Dollar, I haven't packed a rod since the old days of the Moretti mob back in Shy.
I'll bet.
That's a fact. It's a truth. You think I want to get in trouble again? Well, you're wrong, see?
Maybe.
Look, I did my stretch and it learned me a lesson. I'm all through with that kind of stuff. I'm all through with it.
Oh, sure.
It's a fact. It's the truth. I'm strictly legit now. You understand?
What about making book around town without a license?
Who said that?
Well?
You can't prove it. You or nobody else. What's that got to do with Tommy Thomas and the poor guy getting drowned? Tell me that, huh? What is this, Dollar, anyhow?
You really hated his guts, didn't you?
Sure, wouldn't you if... Well...
Sure, because when the chips were down, he didn't give you a hand. He let you and the rest of the mob take the rap. Kept his own skirts clean at your expense.
Listen, what are you trying to do? Get me excited? Say something I shouldn't say? I don't mean...
Keep talking, Charlie.
Sure I hated him. I could have killed him. First, that is. Only at first. Anybody would have felt that way. But, you know, after a few years in the clink, you learn better. What good's it do you? Those things don't matter. You've learned your lesson. I know I did.
Oh, you became a paragon of virtue, I suppose.
I don't know what you're talking about, but that's all over. You hear me? When I just happened to find him living here in Vegas, that was all over. Let bygones be bygones. I mean it. We was pals.
Charlie, there's about as much truth in that.
That's a fact. That's the truth.
Then why did you kill him?
That's a lie. You can't prove it.
That's where you're wrong.
Huh?
I have absolute proof.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I found it on his body.
His body?
I fished it out of Lake Mead this morning.
Now, listen.
You had Hob Fulton show you all the deepest holes when you went out fishing with him. Then the next day, you took Thomas out there alone. You killed him, tied that weighted tackle box to his body, and let him sink down in the deepest hole of all, down below the rock slide.
That windstorm.
Yeah. Gave you the greatest excuse in the world for coming back alone, didn't it? You couldn't have had it better if you'd planned that storm yourself. But it didn't excuse the bullet hole in Tommy Thomas's head from your gun.
From my gun?
Yeah. No longer packing a rod, huh?
Dollar, maybe I... Sort of, kind of. Well, maybe I forgot about this one.
Trigger man, huh? You're a lousy shot. And pretty slow draw, thank heaven. You know something? Now I think I have got proof. Yeah, this gun of yours...
at headquarters, the ballistics team took less than an hour.
Yep.
The bullet they found in Thomas's body came from the same gun Charlie had tried to kill me with. So, distracted prison for him for a long, long time. Oh, and the company will not have to pay double indemnity for accidental death. Expense account total, including a couple of days of excellent fishing with Hob Fulton and the trip back to Hartford, $196.45. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Larry Dobkin, Bartlett Robinson, Frank Nelson, Harry Bartell, and Gil Stratton, Jr. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Coverley speaking.
By far, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense, next on the CBS Radio Network.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned 2 yesterday from the 22nd of March, 1959 on CBS. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lefonier. Now time for a broadcast of Agatha Christie's Hercule Poirot. We'll hear from the author via a recording within this next recording of The Case of the Careless Victim. Our star is actor Harold Huber, who was in many mystery movies during its golden era, everything from Charlie Chan to Mr. Moto, even The Adventures of the Thin Man from the 1930s. This would be his most prominent radio role, and we hear him as the lead now in this mutual broadcast from February 22, 1945.
Agatha Christie's Poirot. From the thrill-packed pages of Agatha Christie's unforgettable stories of corpses, clues, and crime, Mutual now brings you, complete with bowler hat and brave mustache, your favorite detective, Hercule Poirot, starring Harold Huber in The Case of the Careless Victim. Before meeting Hercule Poirot in his first American adventure, it seems only fitting for the millions of faithful readers who have followed the little Belgian detective's career in book form to meet the famous lady who created this famous character. So it is our privilege to present a message from Agatha Christie introducing Hercule Poirot from London, England. The next voice you hear will be Miss Agatha Christie's. Go ahead, London. We regret that due to atmospheric conditions, we have been unable to bring you Miss Christie from London. However, we have a recording which she made earlier today and which was transmitted by shortwave to this country. We present it now.
I feel that this is an occasion that would have appealed to Hercule Poirot. He would have done justice to the inauguration of this radio program, and he might even have made it seem something of an international event. However, as he is heavily engaged on an investigation, about which you will hear in due course, I must, as one of his oldest friends, deputize for him. The great man has his little foibles, but really, I have the greatest affection for him. And it is a source of continuing satisfaction to me that there has been such a generous response to his appearance on my books. And I hope that his new career on the radio will make many new friends for him among a wider public.
Thank you, Miss Agatha Christie. And now, Mutual presents Hercule Poirot in his first American adventure, The Case of the Careless Victim.
mademoiselle?
Huh?
This is the Cozy Home Apartment Renting Agency.
Well, we got something to rent, yeah.
I have the desire to rent an apartment.
Who hasn't?
Please, mademoiselle, do not jest. Hello. I have with me a brief dossier of my requirements. Please to read it.
Well, all right. Gentleman desires the bright sunshining apartment of a reasonable quietness near the heart of the city. Should be furnished with the utmost charm, French, provincial, if possible. Price is of no consequence as long as it is very reasonable. Please communicate with me at the Hotel Windsor, Hercules, P-O-I-R-O-T. Poirot.
No, 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 mademoiselle. The name is Poirot. Hercule Poirot.
Well, I wish you luck, Mr. Poirot.
Well, finding an apartment, mademoiselle, is not a matter of luck. It is a matter of employing the little gray cells. If you can find an apartment for me, please do me the kindness to inform me.
Sure, if you'll do something for me.
And what is that?
If you can find an apartment for me, please do me the kindness to inform me.
Going up. Floor, please.
Number 5. You are new here, no?
Yes, I only came on yesterday. You're Mr. Perrot, aren't you?
Poirot.
Oh, Perrot. One of the boys pointed you out. Hey, yes, sir. Fifth floor.
Oh, 1,000 apologies, madame.
I'm not tall. It was entirely my fault.
Madame appears troubled. Perhaps I may be of some slight assistance.
No, I... Well, if you're sure you don't mind.
But of course not.
You see, it's my door. It won't open.
Uh-huh. And where is this afternoon door?
It's right down the corridor, room 515.
If I may have the key.
But that's just it. The door isn't locked. I left it open only 10 minutes ago.
Indeed. Madame is very trusting, eh?
Well, it is. Mm-hmm. You see, it's stuck. It won't budge.
It is not precisely stuck, madame. It gives a trifle. This door is barricaded.
Oh, my goodness.
Voila, she moves, eh?
Oh, thanks a million. Now, what do you suppose...
No, wait, madame. Perhaps it is better if I look first. Ah, I love. It is as I have feared.
What is it?
You do not know? Look.
Oh, it's a man. You see...
Oui, madame. He has been strangled.
Oh.
This is murder. Dites alors, I must compliment you, madame. Your color, it is excellent. And you did not even commence to faint. For one who...
I don't fall apart in a crisis, if that's what you mean. And furthermore, I'm not madame. I'm mademoiselle, by choice. Miss Abigail Fresher. And now, if you'll get that corpse out of here, I'd like to sit down.
That I regret I cannot do, mademoiselle. The body must not be touched before the police arrive.
Police?
Well, yes, of course, the police. I am calling them now. Hello, hello? Ah, Inspector Stevens. It is I, Hercule Poirot. Alas, no. I have not yet found the apartment. But I have found something of perhaps more interest. A corpse. Right here in my hotel. Room number...
515.
Number 515. Mademoiselle, what are you doing with the body?
Nothing. I was just trying to see his face.
You will have that opportunity later. Pardon, Inspector. We are room 515. Bien. We shall expect you immediately. And here, Miss Fresher, now that you have observed the face of this unfortunate one, perhaps you will be good enough to tell me who he is.
I certainly will not. Think you are.
Ah, mademoiselle, permit me to present myself. I am Hercule Poirot, formerly chief of the Belgian Sûreté.
Well, that's what you say. Now look, Mr. Poirot, I've read plenty of detective stories, and none of them had a detective look anything like you. I'll wait for the police and let them ask the questions.
As you desire, mademoiselle. I merely wish to point out one thing. It is you the police will question first.
Me?
But of course, you are the most likely suspect, no?
All right. What do you want to know?
First, what are you doing here in this hotel?
Why, I've lived here for 10 solid years, ever since I left West Cutsico, Maine.
And what do you do? What is your occupation?
Why, I don't have any occupation. I've got a little income, and I like it here in New York. And the last few years, I've been doing war work, Red Cross, and things like that.
You seem a trifle vague, mademoiselle. Now, about this man. Who is he?
I don't know. I never saw him before in my life.
Mademoiselle, I advise you to consider your answers with care. Do not forget, a man lies dead in this room.
I can't help that. I don't know who he is or how he got here. I told you I was out of the room for 10 minutes.
That may be, Miss Crusher, but it does not help you. This man has been dead for at least 1 hour.
How do you know?
If you will touch the body, you will observe it is already beginning to cool. Therefore, mademoiselle, if you left this room only 10 minutes ago, your situation is indeed grave. For this man was already dead.
Oh, but I couldn't have done it.
So? And why not?
Because his body was lying right across the doorway. You know perfectly well I couldn't get out through this doorway and still leave a body wedged against it. Belgian surety, indeed.
Very good, mademoiselle. But you could have murdered him in here, make your departure by way of this fire escape through the room overhead, and come down inside the building to this corridor where you so innocently made my acquaintance. You see, there is evidence that the fire escape has but recently been used. Now it is not so amusing, eh?
I don't care. I had nothing to do with this. I know you detectives. You're out to get a suspect. And just because a man was murdered in my room...
Gently, gently, mademoiselle. All is not lost. Fortunately, you deal with Hercule Poirot, who goes one step beyond the obvious. You see, this poor man was not murdered in your room. He was killed in the room overhead.
But why? Why kill him upstairs and leave him on my doorstep?
That, mademoiselle, we shall discover in due course.
All right, Mr. Perot, now that you've got the corpse safely locked in my room and us outside, what am I supposed to do? Sleep in the fire escape?
I do not think that will be necessary, mademoiselle. You are coming with me to the lobby where we shall wait for my friend, Inspector Stevens. He will see that you are comfortably sheltered for the night.
Oh. Tell me, Mr. Perot, how did you figure out that the murder took place upstairs?
Is it not apparent, Miss Thresher? Please to squeeze the bell for the elevator. I look out of your window and observe the fire escapes. And what do I find? Everywhere, the dust reposes peacefully.
Well, naturally. The help is too busy to polish fire escapes.
Ah, mademoiselle, but on one stairway, the one leading up from your window, all is disarranged. There is a broad, clear path through the dust, and it is precisely the width of a human body. And since the path extends only to the floor above, it is obvious the body has been dragged down from room 615. Also, on the garments of the dead man, on the trousers, the left elbow, and across the shoulders, there are unmistakable traces of rust.
What?
Ah, voila, the elevator.
Going down.
Monsieur, will you be good enough to explain why you were so long in arriving?
Huh? Oh, it's this old car. Every once in a while, it goes on a fritz.
Comment? On the fritz?
Out of order.
Yeah, it got stuck on the ninth.
You have been on the ninth floor all this time?
Yeah, that's right.
That is difficult to believe.
Why?
Because the indicator has been pointing to the basement.
Ah, that indicator. As soon as anything goes wrong, it flops.
I am not so sure that is true of the indicator. But unquestionably, monsieur, it is true of the Too Clever murder. As soon as anything goes wrong, it flops. Dear Inspector Stevens, there is the situation. An unknown man strangled to death in one room and dragged down the fire escape to another.
Poirot, this body is the person I think it is. The commissioner will have my head.
Ah, mon ami, forgive me, you seem agitated.
And we are warned, too. I assigned my best man to guard him, the smartest cop in my force, Sam Trimble. Good Lord, Poirot, there'll be an international scandal.
Gently, mon ami, you go too fast, even for Hercule Poirot. Who is this magnificent figure of international importance?
Parrish, Jonathan Parrish.
Parrish? Ah, oui, the name rings a bell. He is the big currency expert, eh?
That's right. He's on his way to Europe to set up the new paper currency for the liberated countries. Checked in at the Windsor today. Was supposed to pick up some papers, dyes, and inks, and then hop a bomber tonight.
The fifth floor, please. An enormous undertaking, and one of great importance.
And I was responsible for his safety. He's supposed to be an eccentric sort of guy. No photographs, no publicity. Trimble was the only man in the force who knew him at all, and Trimble failed. Do you see what this means, Poirot?
I see only this, my friend. We have arrived at the first step in the solution of this distressing murder. For now, we know the motive. This way, Inspector. This is the room. Mademoiselle Thresher, your key.
Here you are.
I'll never live this down.
Oh, you exaggerate, mon ami. Even the best of men sometimes fail. Regard, Inspector. Here is your corpse.
I certainly did a job. Thunderation.
You are shocked, monsieur?
Poirot, do you realize what's happened?
But of course, Inspector. It is not Jonathan Parrish who has been murdered, but your own faithful policeman, Sam Trimble.
Well, that's not very funny. You knew it all the time.
Pardon, mon ami, I knew nothing of the sort.
But you distinctly told me.
No, Inspector, you told me. To me, the dead man was an unknown corpse. It could be anyone. But when you speak of two men, one a wealthy financier of international importance, the other a police officer, by employing the little gray cells, it is not difficult to conclude that the corpse with the large, high, comfortable shoes and the plain suit is the policeman.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry.
Monsieur, there is no time now for the profuse apologies.
Oh, you're right. I've got to get to Paris at once. The poor guy doesn't even know his bodyguard's gone. Hello, hello. Operator, what room is Jonathan Parrish in? Huh? 615. Hold on. Oh, that's the room directly over this one where Trimble was killed.
Precisely.
Operator, let me talk to Mr. Parrish.
I think you will find the gentleman does not answer.
Why not?
Oh, obviously, he would not witness a murder without reporting it. On the other hand, he too may...
Good Lord, Poirot, do you think he's dead too? Well, we know he received a warning from Hillary Kent.
I do not follow you, mon ami.
What? Oh, I don't blame it. Hillary Kent is a criminal egomaniac.
Ah, one who commits crime cheaply for the pleasure of baffling the police, eh?
Exactly. Well, this Hillary Kent, or somebody who calls himself Hillary Kent, is one of those guys. He pulled off a few clever jobs and got away with them. We don't know anything about him, but whoever he is, he's got to get his thrill out of every job. So he makes it a rule to warn his victim.
Ah, oui. I know well the type. And Monsieur Parrish, I take it, has received such a warning.
Right. Now you see why I assigned my best man.
Yeah, but now we must hasten upstairs to Monsieur Parrish's room. Already it may be too late.
I'll go too. I don't want to stay here with this body.
You'll stay right here, Miss Thresher, until I give you permission.
Inspector, if you do not mind, myself, I am not averse to Miss Thresher's company. I find her very intriguing.
No answer.
But naturally, you did not expect the murderer to sit down and wait for us. You will have to employ the pass key.
Remember, Miss Thresher, you're not to touch anything.
It's perfectly all right. I'm wearing gloves.
The inspector is thinking of fingerprints? Why, I do not think he will find any. Monsieur Kent, or whoever the killer may be, is too clever to leave any such traces.
Well, maybe. But I want to be sure we don't lose even the tiniest clue.
An excellent approach, mon ami. There are many interesting things we may learn here about Monsieur Parrish.
He certainly gets around a lot.
Oui, the labels on his luggage are from the four corners of the earth.
Miss Thresher, I said you're not to touch anything.
Oh, for goodness sake, it's only a book.
Books may be of great significance. Ah, oui. This one, for example. It is no ordinary book. It is a stamp album of great value. Some of these stamps are almost without price. Ah, very interesting. This Guatemala blue...
Put up your hands, all of you.
Thunderation.
Don't move. I said don't move.
Have no fear, monsieur. I will not dispute the authority of your gun.
Mister, you can't get away with this. Put your gun down and talk fast. Who the devil are you?
But obviously, Inspector, this is the man we seek. Monsieur Jonathan Parrish.
That's just who I am. All right, speak up. Which one of you is Hillary Kent?
Hillary Kent?
Yes.
Well, now, wait a minute, Mr. Parrish. You've got this all wrong. I'm Inspector Stevens, Homicide Squad, and this is Hercule Poirot, the famous Belgian detective.
Ah, so you say. You don't look like policeman to me, particularly that little squirt with a silly mustache.
Eh?
You stay right where you are till I check on you.
Eh bien, Monsieur Parrish, now that you are satisfied as to our identity...
Well, I've heard of you, of course. You're supposed to be the greatest French detective in the world.
Oh, always people say that about me, monsieur, but it is not entirely true. I'm not French, I'm Belgian.
Hmm. Well, I wish you'd all get out of here and leave me alone. I'm expecting my daughter, and I don't want her running into a room full of policemen.
But, monsieur, you are in great danger. You must be protected every moment.
You offering me police protection? Not worth a hoot.
I beg your pardon.
That's what I said, not worth a hoot. I have protection. Some detective they assigned to me. Where is he?
He is dead.
What?
He was murdered in this very room while protecting you.
Therefore, if you do not object too violently, I shall undertake to protect you until you step aboard your airplane.
All right, stay. I don't know how long it'll be. I'm just waiting for one little parcel to be delivered. Then I'm off.
Monsieur is taking with him much equipment?
Yes, quite a load. I've already sent most of it off to the airport.
Ah, bon, that is good.
Miss, don't eat that chocolate. It may be poisoned.
Oh, nonsense. This candy isn't poisoned.
I wouldn't be too sure. That box of candy supposedly came from my daughter, Laura. Was delivered a little while ago.
But you suspect she did not send it.
Well, she's supposed to come here in person. Should be here now, in fact. So why should she send it?
You are very shrewd, mon ami.
Excuse me.
Wait a minute, Johnny. Come back here. What do you want?
Nothing. I just wanted to see if Mr. Parrish got his extra laundry box okay.
Yes, yes, I received it.
Okay, excuse me.
I picked up a few more things to take along, special dyes and inks. They'll just about fill up that laundry box. Now, excuse me, I've got to go into the bedroom and finish packing.
Crusty old bird, isn't he?
How would you be if you knew somebody was out to kill you? No wonder he's jittery.
Ah, he is irritable and nervous. That perhaps explains it.
Explains what?
Why he wears upon his feet that unique pair of socks, one of which is green and the other brown.
All right, if a man wants to be eccentric, let him be. I've still got a murderer to catch. Do you want to come along?
No, Inspector. I have attached myself to Monsieur Parrish, and I propose to see that...
Come in.
Inspector,
One of the men found this on the sidewalk outside the hotel. Huh? Thought you might want to take a look at it before turning it into the lost and found.
Okay, Brady, thanks. Lady's purse. Usual assortment of stuff. Cosmetics, perfume, change, keys. You make any of it, Poirot?
Mm-hmm. Ah, sacre bleu.
What is it?
These initials, L.P. Monsieur Parrish.
Eh?
What did you say was the name of your charming daughter?
Laura.
Oh, Lord. L.P. Laura Parrish.
Poirot, where are you going?
I have a little idea. Mlle Fraîcheur, please to accompany me.
How about Mr. Parrish? You were so attached to him.
I have become momentarily detached. I leave him in your care, Inspector. Protect him with the apple of your eye. Come, come. It will not be the first time you have left the elevator unattended, Monsieur Gendy. Come along.
Mr. Perrault, you're wasting your time in this basement, believe me.
Nevertheless, it interests me. Please to light the way.
There's nothing here, just a lot of ash cans.
One moment. What is behind this door?
That's the laundry bin. We keep the solid linen in there. You won't find anything in there.
We shall take one brief glance, eh?
There, you see? Nothing but a pile of dirty sheets and pillowcases.
Good gracious, what a laundry bill they must have.
Eh bien, let us proceed to... One moment.
What is it?
Sacre bleu, protruding from under these sheets.
Holy cow.
A foot, a small foot. This is what I feel.
Look!
Ah, it moves. Then we are not too late. Quickly, monsieur, help me to uncover her.
That's all I know, Mr. Poirot. I was walking along the street toward the hotel. Just as I passed the alley, I was pulled in. I tried to scream, but something was pressed against my mouth.
Chloroform, Miss Parrish.
Oh.
Had you seen your assailant, you would have seen Hilary Kent. Hello, Miss Parrish. You were most fortunate. Another few minutes under those linens, and who knows? Voila. Here is the room of your father. Inspector Stevens, here is Miss Parrish.
Oh, well, that's a relief. Come in. I was afraid, Poirot, you'd turn up with a body. How'd you manage to find her?
That is not important now. We have found her. But we seem to have lost the father.
Oh, yes. Miss Parrish, I'm sorry. Your father's terribly upset about you. But his material was delivered, and he had to rush off to the airport.
Oh, no. Don't tell me I missed him after all this.
Ah, ma pauvre petite. We have neglected you, eh? Miss Thresher, your room is now free of corpses. Please take Mlle Parrish down and extend to her the first aid.
Come along, Dora. Thank you.
Inspector, I hope you do not later have cause to regret that you permitted Parrish to go off to the airport unprotected.
He'll be all right. Besides, I've got a job to do here, although, frankly, I'm in a complete fog. I can't make head or tail of the whole business.
No, Stephen. The head and the tail we have.
What?
Yes, it is merely a fragment of the middle that we still lack.
Well, who is it? Hey, where are you going?
To see how Miss Parrish is, and to telephone the airport to see that Mr. Parrish receives the proper attention. Au revoir.
Perrault, where are you taking me now? I'd like to have
some... Mr. Perrault.
Hello? Someone calls?
It's Johnny in that parked car.
Mr. Perrault, I got a message for you from Inspector Stevens. He rushed off a minute ago.
From Stevens? What is it? What is the message?
He says he just got word that Mr. Parrish has been seriously hurt in an automobile accident on North Salem Road.
This is too much.
You ought to get there as fast as you can. Here's the address.
52 North Salem Road. Monsieur, your duties for the day are over.
Yeah.
And this is your vehicle?
Yeah, why?
There is no time to seek a taxi, so I will impose on your kindness. Miss Thresher, quickly, please.
Okay. North Salem Road, right?
No, to the airport.
What?
But Mr. Parrish isn't at the airport. He's injured on North Salem Road.
No, mademoiselle. That is what I was intended to believe. Do you not think so, Jenny? He is not there, I assure you.
How do you know?
Well, North Salem Road is not on the way to the airport. It is in the opposite direction. This is merely a trick to keep us from the flying field. We must hurry there before it is too late.
Well, the airplane is still there, but I don't see anything amiss.
Voila, over there.
Parrish, as large as life.
Yep, that's him, all right.
Come along, please. Both of you. Monsieur Parrish.
Monsieur Farrow, my daughter. She
is at the hotel, Monsieur Rest. She has had a small misadventure, but she is entirely safe.
Oh, thank heavens.
You are relieved, eh?
Am I? I don't think I'd have gotten on that plane if you hadn't found her. Fortunately, I didn't have to. They've been delayed a little.
Poirot!
Inspector Stevens, I knew you would not walk into the trap.
Yeah, but as usual, you beat me to it. I was halfway out to North Salem Road before I realized what was cooking.
Eh bien, here is Mr. Parrish safe and sound, eh? I suggest the bomber be inspected with great care. There may be sabotage.
Good idea.
Also, have all the doors of this building guarded.
Mr. Perot, do I have to hang around here?
But of course, Johnny. We may require you for our return trip. Oh, Monsieur Parrish, here is your pilot who approaches.
Oh, we're ready now, Mr. Parrish.
Yes, thank you. Oh, Captain, here comes my luggage. Will you see that it gets aboard?
All right, sir.
And be especially careful of that wooden crate. Well, goodbye, Inspector. I must admit, you've been extremely helpful, and I'm much obliged.
Not at all. Goodbye and happy landing.
Miss Fisher?
Goodbye, sir.
Monsieur Poirot, it's been a privilege to know you. I'm only sorry I couldn't remain to see you break the case.
But you have, monsieur.
I beg your pardon?
The case? It is broken. Inspector, meet Hilary Kent, the gentleman to whom you have just wished bon voyage.
Hilary Kent? You're a mad, Poirot.
Good gracious, I thought he was Paris.
And that wooden crate, which I have waited so long to see, it is not to be moved, Inspector.
Why not?
Because, mon ami, it contains the body of Jonathan Parrish. A charming restaurant, this, n'est-ce pas? The plane circling about give one the feeling of flying, eh?
The feeling I've got is that flying gives you. Keep me from it.
Oh, that is natural. I, too, do not like murder, Miss Thrasher. Ah, Inspector Stevens. Everything is taken care of?
Yeah, they're taking Kent away now.
Then perhaps you will join us in a little supper.
No, thanks, Poirot. I've got to get back. I just dropped over to ask you a few questions.
For example?
Well, when did you first suspect that Kent was impersonating Parrish?
Almost from the start. When we enter the room of Monsieur Parrish, what do we find? Eh? An amazing paradox. On the one hand, we have a man who is an ardent stamp collector whose album is in perfect order. Each stamp, each shade of stamp, precisely in its proper place, eh? Except the most valuable one of all, a Guatemala blue reposing among American 3-cent stamps. Later, when I look at his socks, one green and one brown, I am certain. The man in the room is colorblind.
And therefore not Parrish, the stamp collector.
More important than that, he cannot be Parrish, the currency expert, who is to select the colors and shades of the new paper money. Eh? Therefore, if the man in the room is not Parrish, who is he?
Obviously, Hilary Kent.
Then why didn't you arrest him right away?
Because without a body, one cannot prove a murder. And I felt sure Monsieur Kent would lead me to the body.
Then you weren't guarding him, you were watching him.
Precisely.
Well, you weren't so smart. When you let him out of your sight, he might have gotten away in the plane.
Not at all. When I called the airport, it was to make sure that the plane would not leave until I gave the word.
You know everything, don't you?
Some things are obvious, mademoiselle. We can suppose Hilary Kent discovers the nature of the mission Monsieur Parrish is engaged in. Ah, what a magnificent opportunity for a swindle, eh? Perhaps the greatest in history. To remove Jonathan Parrish, fly to Europe, ask Parrish, deliver the papers, the formulas, the dies to the proper authorities, and then, at the moment juste, counterfeit a new currency and reap a huge fortune.
Jumping codfish. The man must be mad.
Perhaps, mademoiselle, but he is also a genius, eh? He learns that Parrish is at the Hotel Windsor in room 615. He knocks on the door. Parrish admits him and is at once strangled to death, eh? But the body... Ah, that must be disposed of. Where no one will find it. There is but one thing to do. Take the body to Europe in the very packing case which stands in the room.
Then you just guessed where the body was.
No, no, Inspector. There was proof in the room. You remember the second laundry box which Hilary Kent asked for? This is for some special inks, he says to us, which I have only now purchased. Obviously, this is a lie. On such a mission, one does not purchase supplies at the last minute, eh? Hence, I know that these inks and dyes have been removed from some other box or crate to make room for the body.
Gracious, it's as plain as a nose on my face. What about Laura Parrish?
Oh, I've got that figured out. She calls up and says to Kent, Pop, I'm coming over. Of course, he can't allow that, or the jig's up, so he gets down to the alley and eliminates her. Right, Poirot?
Exactly. As for poor Tremble, he has been with Parrish. He knows him. When he knocks on the door and Kent appears, he demands to see Parrish. Kent kills him, and since the packing case is already occupied, drags him down to Miss Thresher's room.
That was his big mistake. He should never have started up with me.
Excuse me for a minute. I think that's the morgue wagon pulling in.
Mademoiselle, may I ask you a question of a personal nature?
Fire away.
Mademoiselle Abbey, you are not now engaged in a business enterprise.
No.
Eh? Are you fluent with the shorthand and the typewriter?
Why, yes.
Bon. Mademoiselle, I find you both intelligent and amusing. A rare combination in a woman. Moreover, I am in great need of a secretary with your superb qualifications.
Why, Mr. Perrault.
Who you do not yet employ the little gray cells to the best advantage. Nevertheless, if you are interested...
Oh, Mr. Perrault, for 10 years I've been devouring detective stories, and you ask me if I'm interested. Chief, you've got a secretary.
Well, Poirot, they're taken Kent away now. I guess that winds up the case.
Not quite, Inspector. Tell me, where does Monsieur Kent reside?
We found a lease on him for an apartment in Gramercy Park.
That is a good neighborhood?
Oh, swell. It's right in the heart of the city. But why do you ask?
I do not think Monsieur Kent will need an apartment for some time. But I do. You see, my friends, it is as I have said. To find an apartment in New York City is the essence of simplicity. One has only to solve 2 murders.
To listen next week when Agatha Christie, America's favorite mystery writer, brings you her favorite detective, Hercule Poirot, starring Harold Huber in the case of Murder by the Sea. Agatha Christie's Poirot is directed by Carl Eastman. Mutual.
Hercule Poirot, on Tuned to Yesterday, from the 22nd of February, 1945, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that's it for this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levoner. Thanks for tuning in.